And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining us from mid-Missouri, she covers all things state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us in studio, he is the Democratic nominee for state treasurer.
Mark Osmek.
Welcome to the show. First time on, but this is not my first time talking with you. Before we talk about how you got involved in the state treasurer's race, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you did professionally before you got involved in Missouri politics.
Sure. So born and raised here in Missouri, fourth generation Missourian, St. Louis area, graduated from Limbrick High School. After that, I went and become rich, so naturally I became an English literature major at Mizzou, made my first million off of semicolons. And then after that, made the best decision of my life and joined the United States Army. Did two tours in Afghanistan, the first one during the surge of 2010 to 11 as a mortar platoon leader, and the second one with the 101st Airborne going back in 13, 14. Stayed in the Army Reserve, but I used the GI Bill, went to D.C., and got my master's in public administration from George Washington. And during that time, I worked for Senator McCaskill, and then at the time, it was a representative, but now Senator Tammy Duckworth, and then the House Armed Services Committee. So currently, I am the Director of Government Relations for an organization called IAPMO, which is the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials. And we focus on plumbing code, safe plumbing codes, but also clean water legislation, so lead remediation, PFAS remediation.
Yeah, fun fact, we just got our pipes replaced at our house by American Water. And it is an involved process. They have to dig up your yard, put the new pipes in, put a bunch of dirt and hay over it. And now we have to drink out of a water filter pitcher for 6 months. So I'm sure you wanted to hear that anecdote.
I did. And as long as your filter is accredited and appropriately approved, which is what my organization helps prove, essentially that the filters do what they're supposed to do, you'll be good to go.
So this is actually your third time running for office. You ran unsuccessfully in 2018 for the 2nd Congressional District. You were running for the 15th Senatorial District, but withdrew before filing. And this time, you got to run for state treasurer unopposed. What made you want to jump back into the political fray after 4 years off?
Yeah, so, well, the first thing is I've been involved the entire time with Missouri politics and legislation. In my current role, I am often in working with Jeff City legislators on both sides. But also, I got a call from Russ Carnahan, who is the chair of the Democratic Party in Missouri. And we were looking at the slate and said, hey, Mark, we got an opening in for state treasurer. What do you think? And I said, well, since I was 5 years old, I've always wanted to be state treasurer. So that's how it came to be.
Really?
No, not really.
I didn't think
no,
so,
no.
But continue.
Yeah. So that's how it came. But it is, even though it's not the sexiest of roles and what people might think it's just an automatic green light for a purse for the state of Missouri, it is not. There's a lot of decision making and processing and evaluation that goes into it, which is something I am very passionate and interested in.
Your opponent, State Treasurer Vivek Malik, was able to win a contested primary by flooding the zone, so to speak, with money. Not only was he able to raise a lot of funds with his political action committee, but he also had the ability to self-fund. How is that reality going to affect your ability to compete?
Yeah, we knew that going in. And also, to be honest, we're facing the opponent that we wanted to face. So, you know, there's certainly some questions about where and how that money is coming into play from him. But we knew it was going to be a lot of money flooding the market. I myself received mailers from him, five of them, which was just wonderful. But yeah, we knew that going into this thing, but also know that our ideas and our messaging is going to surpass what his is and what his have been. And that's what we'll be focusing on and continuing to go throughout the state of Missouri.
Why was Treasurer Malik who you wanted to compete against?
For several reasons. First, he's appointed. This is his first elected position. So this is the first time he's up actually on the ballot. So that's one reason. Whereas others, aside from Lori Rook, State Senator Koenig, Representative Cody Smith, have been elected and termed out. So that's one thing. Another one is he has received a lot of criticism from not just Democrats, but his own party, and heavy criticism, whether it's his decision to put state stickers on gray gambling machines, which are unlicensed, unregistered gambling machines in the state. His actions and his decision-making so far in his roughly two-year tenure in that office have been questionable. So that's the biggest reason is his dealings and his processing and his decisions have been at the very least questionable by the Republican Party.
We ask this to a lot of statewide Democratic candidates, and we'll ask this to you as well. Democrats have struggled against Republicans because of their inability to hold down margins in rural areas to keep fast-growing conservative suburbs close. How do you plan to break this trend?
So, multifaceted way, but there's one proposal, one directive that I'll be focusing on. So, in case you or the listeners don't know, the Treasurer's Office cannot push or write legislation. Well, we can, but someone else has to champion it. Someone else has to sponsor it. But it is a directive and initiative-based role. So specifically to the rural parts of the state, which I completely agree, have been honestly forgotten by Democrats. I'm working to change that. And one way to do that is the following. So it's easy for me to say, well, I don't think any kid in Missouri should not have a meal if they're hungry in a state school. One part of it is if you are hungry in a Missouri school, that I think you should have access to a breakfast, and I also think you should have access to a lunch. I was one of the kids who didn't have enough money and had to get special approval to get that. So one, doing away with that. So free breakfast, free lunch. But the way that I'm focusing on rural Missouri is by talking to farmers and Missouri Ag Associations in the following. A requirement then that when all possible, Missouri breakfasts and Missouri lunches are served with Missouri Ag. So the dairy you drink in the quarts, a half pints in Missouri schools, is Missouri dairy. The corn you eat is Missouri corn. The pork, the chicken, the beef, when at all possible. So what that does is not only instill a bit of state pride in students, but it's great for the farmers and associations in this way. It helps steady the market when it is uncertain. So whenever farmers and associations know that the state of Missouri is their would be the largest consumer and purchaser of their goods, they can better weather any financial instability in the market. So if you look at the cost of pork and beef, there's typically an inverse. Whenever one is up, the other one's down, and then they'll kind of cross over. So this plan would champion and empower Missouri farmers to weather financial storms, but at the end state is also making sure that every kid in Missouri schools has access to a breakfast and lunch free of charge.
So let's move on to treasurer-related issues, which there are many. You mentioned this free lunch program. What are some other innovations you would like to bring to the state treasurer's office, which for our listeners has been in Republican hands since 2017?
Yeah, one of them. So I have two kids, two daughters. One is four, one is one. Child care costs are just obscene. And we just found out, surprised, that my wife is pregnant with our third.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome to the three children club. You will be welcome into the three children club.
Thank you. Yeah, February of next year. Ending child care deserts. So there are 529 plans, obviously, for secondary education or follow on from high school. I want to initiate and start one that is similar to that program, but with a focus on child care or daycare. So even though Senator Koenig and Representative Smith are not in the race anymore, unfortunately, the reverberations from their negative decisions continues on. So in advocating against pre-K and advocating against child care and daycare payments by the state, it is quite audacious for anybody, for Treasurer Malik or any other Republican in the state, to brag about $8 billion, with a B, dollars in state surplus while we offer next to no social services, to include pre-K, daycare, child care. So that is another huge thing that we can start to address in this state to help address the child care deserts through state planning.
I have a follow-up to this. So one of the things that we have offered as University of Missouri System employees are dependent care accounts, where our wife and I put about $2,500 that gets diverted into our paychecks into these accounts. We can then reimburse ourselves. How would your plan be different from that, given that there are tax benefits to doing what I just mentioned? And I don't know if there would be with the program you just mentioned.
Sure. So part of that is $2,500 is a lot of money. And so the part of the program is to help and focus on the families or individuals that don't have that ability. So yes, it'd be easy to say, well, just put $2,000 or whatever into an account. But the very people this plan is intended to help and assist are the ones that can't do it. And so that's what I want to focus on as well, is how can we make that happen? I don't have all the answers for that. But I also do know that with the right foresight, the right direction, the right end state, we can get there. And that is what we will do with this program. So it won't be able to be stood up on day one, but the initiatives to start that program can be. So if you have $2,500, wonderful. But honestly, I'm more concerned about those who don't, because the median family income in Missouri is in the high 30s, low 40s. And that's just, that is a substantial percentage of their income to put away for childcare.
Treasurer Malik has sought to divest the state's investment from Chinese companies. What do you think of this idea?
Well, it's interesting he's done that because he's changed, and I don't know if I would say evolved, but he's changed on his stances on quite a few things. One of them is ESG, so that's environmental science and government. So I think he's reading off a cue card. I think he's reading off of Republican talking points, which aren't working. So initially he said, I want nothing to do with ESG. And then this anti-Chinese rhetoric kind of came in and he said, well, I'm going to make sure I divest from any Chinese connections. Well, the G of ESG is governance or government. So that was part of it. Now he's kind of said, well, I'm going to pull back from that. What he doesn't know is the following in terms of going back to the rural part, going back to pigs. There is a part of the pig that is only purchased by China. So what I didn't know before talking to farmers is that Missouri pork is sought after worldwide and specifically in China. But there's a part of the pig, it's the anus, that goes for $1.50 a piece. And that is a part of the pig that no other country in the world purchases. So it's not European, it's not gone sold to Mexico, it's not sold to Canada. It's not that it can't be, it's that it's not wanted. So my point is this. We have to be very careful on how we do this, because if we cut off any kind of financial tie to China, one, they buy a tremendous amount of Missouri rice, which is made in the Boot Heel. They buy a tremendous amount of Missouri pork, which they have said is the sweetest pork they've ever had. And they buy parts of the pig that only they buy. So if Treasurer Malik can explain to a Missouri farmer why we shouldn't be able to sell that part of the pig $1.50 per pig times however many pigs these farmers have, he has my blessing. But in the meantime, I think there's a way to make this work to where we are not supporting communist nations to the detriment of the United States or our allies, but while also maintaining strong economic ties that benefit Missouri farmers.
Yeah, to piggyback off that a little bit, do you think the litmus test around investment should be whether it makes the state money or not and not necessarily where a company is located?
I think we can do both. So there's something called the never contract with the enemy in the federal government, and that is to ensure if you own a company X and if you sell sprockets, that two or three subcontractors down does not have connections, financial connections to an adversary of the United States, i.e. Russia, i.e. China, i.e. Iran, that could be detrimental to our country. So I think there's a balance that we can strike. So in terms of, is this moral, is this ethical, is this environmentally sound, I know we can take all those factors into consideration and still make wise, sound financial decisions for the state that benefit us without going too far one way or the other. So we would never do this, but if Russia says, well, invest in us and you'll get a 100% return on your investment, well, absolutely not, right? But I think there's a balance between what we can do and where we're at right now, what Treasurer Malik has said.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of an interesting precedent-setting question, because there are a lot of countries with autocratic governments that we trade with. I'll just name a few off the top of my head. Saudi Arabia, Singapore is a de facto autocratic government. Turkey is arguably an autocratic government, though probably not as much as those other two. So if you're not going to trade with countries that you mentioned are deemed like adversarial to the United States, do you also have to take into consideration that you're not going to trade with countries that are not democracies as well, but maybe allies of us?
Right. And so that's where I think some common sense comes in. But that's where I think, unfortunately, it's a bit lacking right now in the current office, and that I hope to bring. I know we can bring to that differently in January. But just to kind of hone it down, we will make wise, sound investments. I personally am conservative when it comes to financial investments. High risk is terrifying when it comes to that. I don't care what the reward could be at the end, but it is gambling. I would never gamble with Missouri taxpayers' money. But there is also a balance. As someone who's still in the Army, has served 16 years, I know right from right, I know wrong from wrong, and only to deal with those who have the best interests of the United States or allies in mind.
A couple of years ago, voters rejected a ballot measure allowing the treasurer's office to expand where it can invest the state's money. Do you think it may be time to revisit that idea, especially since the state possesses a massive surplus that could get a better rate of return?
Yes, I'd be open to that. I think with the $8 billion in surplus, which the Republican Party has been touting, which I am suspect of, but come January, I'm interested into actually proving or disproving. But as far as the $8 billion, I think that most immediately should be focused in Missouri, namely teacher pay, of which we are all but dead last, of which as I mentioned, addressing child care deserts, of which initiating and starting Missouri Ag for Missouri Schools program. So before I get into that, if we have so few services for the people of this state, these aren't freebies. These are services that the state government should be providing. But they have the audacity to say, well, we've got this huge surplus while providing next to no services. And then bragging that they're going to be taking away more in the future. So if our teacher pay is almost dead last in the entire country, and by the way, for listeners' context, the state of Missouri was the first state to have a kindergarten program, the first one in the entire country. We were very highly regarded nationally in terms of academic achievements for K through 12. But as public schools, private can do what they want, but as far as public universities and colleges go, the focus should be on ensuring that Missourians have good K through 12 and pre-K and child care opportunities and very sound and affordable options if you want to go to college or if you want to go to trade school. So whatever that is most immediately where I'm interested in reallocating that surplus. And then we can also concurrently start talking about where to invest the remainder of that. That is a sound fiscal decision.
One of the other responsibilities you would have as treasurer is to manage the state's unclaimed property program. What would you like to do with that program to make it better?
Advertise it more. And there's an additional part of that that I don't think Treasurer Malik is aware of, which I'm sure he's listening. He will be after this, is to return military medals that have been unclaimed by families or lost. So that is something that is ongoing, which I haven't seen any movement on. But as someone who's served for 16 years and had two combat deployments and one humanitarian deployment to Qatar and Jordan about a year and a half ago, that is another focus that this office will have, is ensuring that when at all possible, military medals that have been lost by families or from moves or left in safety deposit boxes are returned to the rightful owners, next of kin, or family members. So, yes, advertising that, which, look, he's done. He's been pushing that right before the election, which is not a coincidence, or before the primary. But, yeah, we can do a much better job of that. But what won't happen is putting those claims on gray or illegal gambling machines like his office has done.
That was going to be my next question. We talked with him about that when he came on Politically Speaking, and I think his rationale behind that is he wants to flood the zone with advertisements wherever people are. But he conceded that it was a mistake, and he pulled the decals, which I thought was notable. Just a politician admitting he screwed up openly, I think, is something people should do more of. So what do you kind of make of his overall decision-making? And could you just chalk this up to he's a new office holder and he made a mistake and it shouldn't be something that haunts him for the rest of his life, basically?
Haunting, no. But I think anybody with any decent common sense would know you don't do that, especially on something that is unlicensed or gray, which is just a polite way of saying illegal. So if that falls under his purview and he's putting stickers on saying, hey, you might have unclaimed property, you might have X number of dollars. I can't recall the exact number, but there was a number on that. There are,
I think it was $1 billion.
$1 billion on gambling machines. And I forget the representative's, the Republican representative's name.
Representative Scott Cupps.
Scott Cupps, yep. He's got a great cowboy hat too in his picture.
So do I. I got it from Montana, but that's beside the point. Continue.
So he was grilling him in a committee session or a committee hearing about this very thing. And I think Treasurer Malik's response was like, look, I'm not here to talk about the morality of Missourians. I'm not a pastor or a priest or a rabbi or anything like that. Yet, duly noted. And that's what Representative Cupps said as well. But this doesn't even pass the common sense sniff test of, hey, should I put state stickers claiming you might have $1 billion on a gambling machine that is not registered with the state of Missouri? So, okay, if we're going to give kudos that he acknowledged the wrong thing, it never should have been done in the first place.
We'll be right back after this quick break with Democratic State Treasurer hopeful Mark Osmak. And we're back on Politically Speaking with Democratic State Treasurer nominee Mark Osmak. And we're going to move on to one of my favorite subjects in the world, low-income housing tax credits. Is it really my favorite subject in the world? No, but it is interesting to me from a policy standpoint. And one of the duties of State Treasurer is you serve on the Missouri Housing Development Commission, which approves low-income housing tax credits. The incentive has been controversial for a while because critics say it's not efficient and it's a public boon for private developers. I would say that the controversy around it has subsided in the last few years, but who knows? There may be another controversy that arises. And that's a long-winded way of asking, what is going to be your posture toward approving these incentives, and what changes would you want to see in the program, if any?
So it'd be a case-by-case basis as far as approving. I was recently in the Fort Leonard Wood area where housing is an issue. So as someone who's been in the Army for 16 years, when there are installations that are not close to metropolitan, major metropolitan areas, rent can very quickly go beyond what most people can afford. So you could have been born and raised in St. Roberts or Waynesville, Missouri, and find yourself unable to afford the housing options there because of the installation. And the reason why is because there's something called BAH, Basic Housing Allowance, that is set by the federal government. It's updated every single year. The DOD reevaluates that says, hey, if you're this rank and whether you have dependents or not, you get this amount based on your zip code for housing, okay? But that kind of artificially inflates sometimes when there's lack of competition, artificially inflates the actual cost of living. So in places like that, I think, yeah, this is a great thing to, one, increase the housing, which will help lessen the financial burden and lessen the artificial inflation for those costs. So it'd be, to answer your question, it would be a case-by-case basis. I don't think it's inherently bad at all. But without competition, costs can very quickly go up and price people out of any kind of housing options.
Yeah, and this is a really nuanced in the weeds question, but I think when he was state treasurer, Scott Fitzpatrick was able to get the rest of MDHC. I think I got that acronym right. If not, you can strike me with lightning to redeem the low-income housing tax credits quicker, because before that, it was a 10-year period. I don't think it required a shorter redemption period, but it at least made it possible. So it may not be as costly to the state. I'm not sure if you've really studied that very closely.
Every night.
Do you think that was a good idea? Would you want to maybe make that more available to potential developers?
Yeah, again, on a case-by-case basis, I think, to evaluate that. And so if it's best for the developers, which, you know, full disclosure, I am very much pro-union, and I think the contracts, all the contracts go through the Treasurer's Office for fiscal approval. But yeah, I think this could be a big benefit for developers and builders in Missouri, which has a trickle-down effect of plumbers, electricians, carpenters, I mean, you name it, everything that goes into a house, suppliers, wholesalers, contractors, subcontractors. There's a lot of benefit to this.
One of the other duties of the state treasurer's office is administering the educational savings account program. The legislature and Governor Mike Parson expanded the program this last session, and you oppose this program. But what can you do to administratively, you know, constrain it if the program is in state statute?
Yeah, good question. So you know, in terms of this state or school vouchers, they do go through the treasurer's office. I am not a supporter of that at all. I understand that there are, again, case-by-case basis or decisions that might have to be made for that. But by and large, taking money away from public schools, taking money away from, I think, what is rightfully every single Missourian's is wrong. And again, the arrogance and the pseudo clutching of pearls to say, my God, how bad public schools have gotten whenever they continue to defund them. And we look at the challenges facing SLPS right now in terms of busing and getting kids to schools. I read a few comments on Twitter saying, hey, what about the National Guard in non-uniform, non-military vehicles, obviously, but assisting students get to SLPS? Okay, but the other problem is that we got a lot of them at the border of Texas and Mexico, which is something else I'd like to mention as well. Yes, I don't support vouchers at all. Now, what effect that could be? Honestly, it might just be slowing the process down. If it goes to the AG's office, so hopefully Elad Gross is elected AG, then we have a different discussion. But if it is the incumbent, Bailey, then that's a different thing. But I will oppose them and I will fight them and slow them down to the best of my and the office's ability to ensure that every single penny that's due to Missouri's public schools goes there and is not diverted through a cloak and dagger program, like a most scholars account. I think it's about 1,200 students or 1,200 scholarships or so that right now are being tested.
An argument from pro-ESA, you know, supporters is that they're helpful to provide kids in underperforming school districts and it gives them a chance to go to a better school. What do you make of that argument?
I think they're underperforming because Republicans have made them underperforming. If you cut funding to this radio station and then say, well, we're not on the air. Well, no kidding, because you haven't paid the bill to broadcast out. So I think that's a very self-serving argument. And also, this has been tried in other states, most recently in Oklahoma. And there's an article discussing that basically once you do this, not only do public schools continue to deteriorate and fall and fail, but also private schools increase their costs because they don't want your kid there. So if they're charging X, they will be now X plus whatever that amount is to make sure that it is not a level playing field for everybody. Private schools can charge what they want. That's completely fine. But it is a fool's errand to think that, well, we're going to open up the door here and it's going to be better for everybody. No, believe me, it's happened in other states. Private schools will continue to be private, and that's fine. But they're going to keep a lot of kids out. That's their purview. But for public schools, my major focus is ensuring that every single penny and more that Republicans have cut goes back to public schools. And a big part of that is by stopping the voucher program.
I want to talk about pensions. The state treasurer is on the Moser's board. What would you do to make sure that the pensions that Moser's oversees are sound for the foreseeable future?
They're untouched, that it's not even a factor into diminishing, weakening, lessening, taking money away from, gambling with, into the most sound, reliable, boring of financial accounts and planning. That's what it would be, just to ensure that every single worker who has one deserves it, has earned it, is the big thing, earned it, and to not touch it at all and to not play fast and loose with it. So, again, I'm very conservative when it comes to fiscal risk, just because I raised in a trailer park, I've seen what happens whenever we play risk or make risky decisions with other people's money, which is something I couldn't do. I wouldn't do with my own, and therefore I wouldn't do with anybody else's.
Let's shift a little bit to politics beyond your race. You were actually recently at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and I'd be interested to hear your takeaways from Kamala Harris-Palooza, so to speak, which is actually an appropriate descriptor since Lollapalooza is now based in Chicago. So I'm going to give myself a pat on the back for that very good reference.
I'll see you at Burning Man next year.
Yeah, I am planning on going to that, but continue.
Yeah, it was thrilling. So I went to the, you know, kind of a real St. Louis experience, went to the Cardinals game on Sunday afternoon, and then took the train a la Harry Truman from downtown St. Louis to Chicago. So I was there Monday and Tuesday. It was an absolutely thrilling and exhausting experience. Exhausting the best way, but thrilling in every way imaginable. So the speakers, the energy, it was real. It was bona fide. You could sense it. I mean, this is in stark contrast to the other side, which has been much more doom and gloom. But there is hope. There's energy. But hope without a plan is nothing. There is a plan here. And so I think with soon-to-be Vice President Walz and soon-to-be President Harris, we're all definitely on the right track. People are energized, and it's something that I don't know. Everyone I've talked to, such as Russ Carnahan, they haven't seen since 08. And while I was too young to vote, maybe during President Clinton's first run in 92.
How do you think Vice President Harris and Governor Walz will do in Missouri? Like, I don't think even the most optimistic Democrats here think that they're going to win the state. But I don't think that's the goal. The goal is for them to lose by a lesser margin than Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden did, because that's going to have a big impact on your race, the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race. What is the case that the Harris-Walz ticket is going to lose by single digits as opposed by high double digits, which is what happened in 2016?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be high double digits, but I couldn't guess about what it's going to be, how close. But the energy is there, the excitement is there, and it's there for the right reasons too. So as far as predictions, I couldn't tell you. I'm more optimistic about places that we as a party have struggled. So Southeast Missouri portions and closer to Arkansas. So yeah, there are some. They're about 30, 33, 34% that will never be swayed. And that's, we understand that. But I think it's going to be closer to what people think. And what that, all the negativity that's been swarming around the other side. And honestly, the incompetence from Vice President candidate Vance has really pulled a lot of people away.
Amendment 3, which is the abortion legalization measure, is slated to go before voters this November. Why do you think Missourians will vote for this?
Because it has gone so far. It has terrified people of what could happen to them and to themselves and their families. Our second child, my wife and I, Caitlin, our second child, Kennedy, named after the good Bobby, Bobby Kennedy, she's a product of IVF. That would not be, that's under threat without voting for Amendment 3. We are expecting our third, but unfortunately, and this is something that is sadly common, more than people, I think, talk about, we have lost children along the way. And depending on when that was, we had to go in for medical intervention because the pregnancy was far enough along to where it wouldn't happen by itself. So these things are under threat. And in terms of rape, in terms of incest. I mean, my God, this is so draconian, so extreme. I think now that I think people are seeing it and it's we're swaying back the other way. A concerning thing is, and this is, again, sadly, doesn't seem to be terribly uncommon. A very common Google search is women asking, will my husband know how I voted? Whether it be in support of the Harris ticket or in support of Amendment 3 in Missouri. The answer is no, but that is a very concerning thing. So I think it is going to have an immense, or I shouldn't say immense, I think it's going to have about a 3 or 4% bump. I don't know where that 3 or 4% is going to come from, whether it's from previously disengaged voters who are registered but would not have otherwise voted, or if it's going to come from people who have typically or historically voted Republican who are just saying, hey, look, this is too much. But how that affects the Harris ticket and then everyone from governor down ballot in Missouri, I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to ask how much of an effect you think this measure will have on down ballot contests like yourselves, but even, you know, state Senate, state House races. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think the voter is going to be really interesting. How things turned out in November is going to be a case study on this. For my race for treasurer, I think it will have an impact. But I think with people, the further down the ballot they go, like literally going down the ballot, they might see the connection decrease. But, you know, Missouri's interesting in that we'll vote for pro-marijuana legislation. We'll vote for pro-union legislation. We hopefully will vote for pro-Amendment 3, but then still vote for very conservative or far-right state members who will commit themselves to dismantling the very thing the voters have pushed through.
Well, perhaps very conservative Republicans enjoy an edible before going to bed. We don't know the answer to that. But nevertheless, I do want to talk about another race where I think the abortion initiative could have an impact, and that's the U.S. Senate race between Lucas Kuntz and Josh Hawley. So Kuntz has really put together an impressive campaign, not only 2024, but in 2022 when he lost to Trudy Bush Valentine. It's been well-funded. It's been very disciplined message-wise. You were at the state fair and got to witness the Hawley Kuntz Sedalia skirmish. I think a video that you posted was actually on MSNBC, if I'm not mistaken.
It might be close to 2 million views now.
Crazy. Yeah. Well, first of all, before I ask about that race, what did you make of that confrontation? There have been some people who are like, well, I'm from New York, and that wasn't really a confrontation. But it was unusual, and I'd be interested to hear your perceptions of it.
Yeah, I was sitting down having breakfast at the governor's breakfast. So for listeners, there's this massive pavilion and just lines set up kind of like military style. You go through, and it's a buffet style line. So I'm sitting there talking to Crystal Quaid, the nominee for governor, and I see this large scrum to my left, her right, and I stand up and there's Senator Hawley and Lucas Kuntz. So it was very surprising, and they were going head to head, and there was just a complete swarm of 30 to 40 cameras and reporters around them.
We were a part of that. Apologies.
Yeah, no, it's okay. But I'm a tall guy. I'm 6'3", and I've got gangly arms, and so I just stuck my arm over into the center of it, and I think that's kind of what how the video turned out. But it was intense. I didn't see the walk up that Senator Hawley had of like, hey, let's go talk to this guy. It really was kind of gotcha stuff. It was premeditated by him, and then it backfired, quite frankly. And so I think initially Lucas was surprised like the rest of us, but then he found his footing, and I think he did a phenomenal job in responding.
Okay, so you're familiar with how federal congressional and Senate campaigns work, because you ran for Congress in 2018. And I'm just going to be blunt here. If the Democratic or Republican committees do not buy into a race, it is very difficult for that challenger to win. We talked before the show, there are pluses and minuses to having that support. If you don't have that support, you can be a little bit more independent about how you campaign. But if you don't have that support, it's kind of like a tacit belief that you're not going to win. And right now, at this point in time, I don't think the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee has bought into Lucas Kuntz's campaign. What is the case to make national Democrats buy into Missouri?
Well, my take is a little bit different. He's done a fantastic job. I think it can be a benefit if the national level of Democratic Party or any party gets involved. But at the same time, I'll just look at the scoreboard. There are two Republican U.S. senators. All six statewide offices are Republican. We have a Republican House and a Republican Senate at the state level in Missouri. So we got to start somewhere. So I'm not offended that they're not getting involved. I think we have to show what we can do. He is doing that. I think we're doing that in our race. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised. But you need one. You need one to get in. And we need to believe in a few races that we actually can win. I do think his can be won. He's going about it his own way. I'm not a spokesperson for his campaign, but I think he said, like, hey, look, we're getting our tails kicked in the past. I'm going to try something different. And that's what he's doing. And he's been successful at that. And I know that's a similar thing that I'm doing. Maybe it's a military mindset that he's a Marine and I'm Army. But look, what we have done in the past hasn't worked. Whenever national level entities have gotten involved, it hasn't worked. So let's try our own thing.
You're not going to hold it against him that he's Marines instead of Army.
No. We get along swimmingly on that.
I never served, so I didn't know if there's tension between
No,
the
just
two.
Fun tension.
I think that Jason Kander, who's in the Army, and Stephen Weber, who Marines. Is in the Marines, yeah. can attest to that. Well, thank you so much for joining our show. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. You can read all of our coverage of the 2024 election cycle by going to stlpr.org. And Mark, how could people find more about your campaign on the World Wide Web?
Sure. It's real simple. It's markosmack.com or osmackformissouri.com. And another thing that we're focusing on is making sure that Missouri Army National Guard and the Missouri Highway Patrol are actually in Missouri, serving Missouri, and not at the border of Texas and Mexico, staring into the night, which is where Treasurer Malik has focused on the wall, which I could not disagree with more. My focus is on Missouri, not on Texas. Texas can deal with themselves.
Thank you very much. And until next time, so long.